As we get to approximately the halfway point of the book and our series, it's important to remember to not get lost in all the stuff that Pastor Cindy just talked about. The image, the symbols, the trumpets, the seals, all that kind of stuff is super fascinating. But we must remember that the book of Revelation is not, you know, a series of these just images for nothing. In fact, we must remember that Revelation is first and foremost a letter. It's a letter written by a pastor with a very important message to the churches at the time. Like Pastor Cindy said, when we started the sermon series, we talked about where the church is at this time. The churches didn't have everything super easy. In fact, it was pretty difficult for them. There was a portion of the churches that was under tremendous persecutions, like the Church of Smyrna, the Church of Philadelphia. They were forced to make a stance in their lives, whether you're going to worship the emperor or you're going to die. There are also other churches facing different hardships, churches facing temptations and deceptions. These are the churches like Pergamum, like Thyatira. They are under temptation and deception. And in particular, what we mean is false teaching and practices from the culture that, you know, seeped into the church, like things like sexual immorality, things like worship of the idols. And the people were deceived and tempted to become like the culture, become like the people around them. And a lot of times they don't even know this is happening. And so it's under this difficult context that the book of Revelation, the letter, was written. And each scene that we've been looking at so far has a very particular message, that Christ is present, that God is in control, that he has a plan. But all of these add up to one single, very important message that the pastor wants the church to know. And you must remember this as we continue on the series. The central message of the book of Revelation is to conquer. At the very beginning of the book, Jesus wrote seven letters to seven churches, and the command to them was to conquer. Seven times Jesus says this to all seven of the churches, and he makes seven promises to those who conquer. And at the end of the book, all of these promises are fulfilled, and God says, the one who conquers, here's the word again, the one who conquers will have this heritage, and I'll be his God, and he'll be my son. So the book ends, has conquered in it. And guess what? In the middle of the book is also the message to conquer. Now we must ask the question, what does conquer mean? Conquering something, conquering somebody. Some Bible translations have this word as prevail or as come off as victorious, and it's almost always used in a war or a battle context. Turns out Jesus' message to the church is that they are in a battle. You're at war. Jesus tells them you have to win, you have to overcome, you have to come out victorious. And that's the same message today. The church is still at war today. You're all in a war. This is a war you didn't sign up for. Maybe some of you didn't even know existed. But you were born into it, and most likely, well, actually, we don't know, but for some of us, we will spend our entire lives in this war. You don't get to leave. You don't get to escape. You have a choice. You win or you surrender. You conquer or be conquered. Let's pick up from where we left off last week. That was when the seven trumpets were blown. God's judgment is real. The church must go and speak the word, spread the word, because time is short. But it's going to be hard because there's a war zone out here. What did John see? What's going on in this war? We go to Revelation chapter 12. He first saw this first battlefront of the war. He saw a great sign. He saw a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. This woman was pregnant. The woman is a sign, a symbol for the Old Testament people of God, of Israel. Because this, you remember Joseph. Joseph had a dream that his father was the sun, his mother was the moon, and his brothers were the 12 stars, which later became the 12 tribes of Israel. So the woman is a sign, is a symbol of God's people. God's people before Jesus was born. And the woman gave birth to a child, one who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron. The woman is the Old Testament Israel, who gave birth to a child to rule the nation. And the child is Jesus. Jesus came from the Old Testament people of God. So we have the woman, we have the child. He also saw another sign, another character. He saw a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven. And you don't have to guess for this one. John tells you, this is Satan. The sign, the dragon, is a sign for Satan. He's powerful, he's terrifying, he's rebelling against heaven. And so what happens in this battlefront? We have three characters, the woman, the child, and the dragon. The dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth so that when she bore her child, he might devour it. The first battlefront is between the dragon and the child. And you know this. This is the Christmas story. Some of you heard this. When Jesus was born, King Herod ordered all the 2-year-old boys to be murdered. The dragon sought to kill Jesus, to devour Jesus through King Herod. That wasn't successful, but 30 years later, the dragon did eventually kill Jesus. Through the political and religious leaders at the time, the child was killed on the cross. But the child didn't lose. Things are not as they seem. Chapter 12, verse 4, the child was caught up to God and to his throne. Jesus died, but he didn't lose. He went and he took the keys from death and Hades and was raised to the throne and now reigns with God on the throne. The first battle in this war is between the child and the dragon. Fought on Christmas Day, and Good Friday, and Easter Sunday. But the victory belongs to the child. The child won by dying and defeating death. The second battlefront of this war is in heaven. War arose in heaven. Michael, the archangel, and his angels are fighting against the dragon. The dragon and his angels, the angels of Satan, fought back, but he was defeated and there was no longer any place for them in heaven. The great dragon was thrown down. The ancient serpent, who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world, he was thrown down to earth and his angels were thrown down with him. Satan lost the battle in heaven. And the aftermath was that he was thrown down, ejected, and kicked out. And heaven celebrated their victory, as they should. Now the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ have come, for the accuser of our brothers and sisters have been thrown down, who accuses them day and night before our God. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and all you who dwell in them. But woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows that his time is short. The heavens rejoice, but woe to the earth, for Satan has come down to you. And the dragon is furious. He's angry that he's thrown down. He's angry that he lost. So what does he do? He goes after what is dearest to God. He goes after God's people. He goes after all of you. The dragon became furious and went off to make a war on the rest of the woman's offspring, on those who keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of Jesus. That's the church. That's you. This is why the central message of the book of Revelation is to conquer, is to overcome. Because the reality, the invisible reality of this world, this present time, is the church. You are at war. Things are not as they seem. There's much more to this world than what you can see with your physical eyes. You are at war. You cannot escape it. You cannot run from it. You don't get to choose whether you're in it. You are born into this war, and it's one that you didn't sign up for. What is the objective of the dragon? The dragon knows that his time is short, so he knows he's going to be thrown down into hell and into fire. So what he wants to do is he wants to pull you down to hell with him. And how does he do that? As long as he can get you to turn away from worshiping Jesus. Now, in order to conquer him, church, I want to stop here for a second.
when we are exposing the schemes of the devil and we're talking about this, this mic goes out of whack. We tested it before the service, nothing happened to it. The spiritual war is real. Things are not as they seem. The dragon wants to distract you, wants to bring you down. Because he knows his time is short. He wants to bring you down to hell with him. Again, how does he do that? To get you to turn away from worshiping Christ. And so in order for us to conquer, to overcome, we need to know how he's attacking us. And the book tells us this. You have to pay attention to this. The devil's attack consists of three strategies. I'll go through them one by one. The first strategy, I compare this in a battle to the strategy of disinformation. Disinformation, what does that mean? It means that Satan's attack and his weapons, the strongest weapon that Satan has is his words. He doesn't need to get his hands dirty. He just needs to tell you a lie, give you a little doubt, plant it in your heart, just let it grow and see what happens. It's similar to countries back then in World War II. They drop propaganda leaflets into the enemy's territory, meant to create doubt in their citizens, in their soldiers, in their nations. What happens is their faith will get corrupted and be destroyed slowly from within, and they just give up. And the dragon does this primarily with two types of words, accusation and deception. Accusation and deception. How do we know this? Because we read in the passage that Satan is first an accuser and then a deceiver. Accuser of the brothers and sisters and deceiver of the whole world. What do these words sound like? I'll go through them with you. Accusations are words that make you doubt who you are to God. He'll say stuff like this to you. You are a sinner. God doesn't like you anymore. You're so useless. You always fail when you do this, when you step up, when you go serve, when you lead. You always fail. You're so useless. You fail at school. You fail at your job. You quit your school. You quit at your job. Nobody wants you. Just give up already. I mean, look at your face. Look at your body. Look at all of the stuff that you don't know what to do, all of your flaws. Who made you like this? No one likes you. Why are you even here? Have you heard some of those? That's accusations. Made to destroy your view of yourself completely so you would just wave the white flag. I give up. I give up. Deceptions are words that make you doubt who God is to you. And he doesn't have to give you a big paragraph to convince you. He just needs to twist a little lie, much like he did to Adam and Eve. Did God really say you can't do this? Is God really good if he lets you eat from any trees, but not that one? Is God really good to you, you know, if he would allow this to happen, this tragedy to happen to you? I mean, maybe God isn't the only way. Because if God is the only way, isn't he a little selfish? I mean, maybe God doesn't really care about what you're doing here. I mean, God's love, everything's cool. He's very forgiving. Don't mind. He doesn't mind what you do here. The point of these deceptions is the devil will use seemingly true statements and twist them just a little to make you walk away from God. That's the first strategy, disinformation. Satan will drop lies, you know, doubt, leaflets onto you so that you create a false understanding of yourself and God. And let's be honest, we have all heard of this stuff. I want to tell you, this is not just you talking to yourself. This is not you talking to yourself only. There is a war going on. Satan is going after you. That's the first strategy. The second strategy that he goes after the church, it's a little bit more obvious. I call it encirclement. You know what encirclement is? Is when you have so much troops that you just surround the target completely and enforce them, are you going to fight? If you fight, you will die, or you should surrender. And he doesn't need to do this himself. He has accomplices. He has help. he has a commander. And at the end of chapter 12, the dragon stood at the edge of the sea. And what happens? He says, immediately John saw a beast rising out of the sea. Again, symbols, not a literal monster, a beast. What is this beast? We have to look at what John describes to, you know, understand what this is. The beast has two horns and seven heads, with 10 diadems on his horns and blasphemous names on his head. It's powerful, and it's very clearly opposed to God with the blasphemous names. What does beast look like? The beast looks like a leopard. Its feet were like a bear's. Its mouth was like a lion. For us, this just looks like nonsense. This is just monster. But for John and the first century church, this is very clear. This is the Old Testament reference. Some of you may know this. In the book of Daniel, another book of Apocalypse, there was a beast. There were beasts like leopard and bear and lion, which symbolized the empires at the time that went against God. And so when John sees this beast from the sea, he's associating it as a symbol for any human empires, any institutions, political power that is opposed to God. And this beast uttered haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. The beast is a symbol for institutions and governments that don't follow God. And when institutions and governments are not aligned to God in his ways, what they're going to do? They're going to roll out policies, roll out, you know, events, roll out things for believers to choose. And if you choose wrong, there's going to be a consequence, and you get persecuted. Back in the first century, this was very obvious. The Roman Empire forced people to worship emperor. If you don't, there's a consequence. You're thrown into jail. Now, in the 21st century, it's still present in very obvious cases, like, you know, places like China and India and Egypt. Exact same thing happened. But there are more subtle ones here in North America. Any institution that pressures you to choose your faith and fitting in is an example of this beast. For example, I don't know, some of you have had to choose whether to go out during Pride Month. And for some of you in here, in school, in work, the decision you choose will have a consequence. Either people will discriminate against you, will isolate you, will think you're old-fashioned. That's the strategy of the dragon. It empowers human institutions to circle and encircle Christ followers and force them to make a stand. Church, this is not just peer pressure. This is not peer pressure. This is war. The dragon going after you. That's the second strategy. The third strategy of the dragon is done by another of his commanders, the second of his commanders. And this one, I'm afraid, is the one that churches are the most susceptible to. We are the most clueless to this. So we're the most vulnerable against this. And I compare this strategy to infiltration. Similar to, you know, battle strategies of the false flag. You know what a false flag is? Is when the enemy takes up your flag, puts your armor on, learn your code, and then just kind of infiltrate you. You don't know that he's here, but he's here. And what he's going to do is he's going to give you false information, he's going to lead you astray, or maybe some even backstab you. Infiltration. And this is done by the commander, so-called commander, who is the beast from the earth. What does this beast symbolize? Let's take a look. Revelation chapter 13. This beast had two horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. This beast pretends to be like the lamb, like Jesus. As in, it's probably some sort of religious power. It pretends to be like our faith, but it's false. And its objective is very clear. It's to steal the worship of Jesus. It makes people worship the beast and the dragon and the idols of the first beast. How does he do that? He deceives people, doing signs and miracles. And this religious power causes people to be marked on the right hand or the forehead with the name of the beast. Not literally, symbolically. What does that mean? that you pledge allegiance to the beast, that your life now belongs to the beast. It deceives you to a point where you say, I'm going to worship the beast. I'm going to follow the dragon. And so let's put his name on my forehead. I belong to him. That's allegiance. And so if anybody doesn't have that mark, they will have tremendous difficulty in their lives, like doing business, buying, or selling. And back in the first century, the churches struggled with false religion and false teachings. There's false apostles, false teaching that taught sexual immorality and the worship of idols. And you can imagine this. If they don't go into the prostitution houses, don't go to the clubs, there's probably some consequences to their lifestyle. And to this, at this point, you may say, well, there's no false teacher here. There's no false religion. There's no false prophet. We're pretty cool. We're safe here. That's what Satan wants you to believe. I want to tell you a real story. This happened in 2023, just this year, this summer. We have permission to share this. This has happened to two brothers and sisters in this church. In this church, you probably have seen them around. What happened was there's two members in this church. They're new Christians. New Christians, new to the faith. And so it's very normal, and it's very, you know, normal for them to want to have a community, want to belong to community, to want to learn more about Christ, learn more about the Bible. And so have this, you know, very positive and honest heart to search for community and know the Bible a bit more. And so one day, they're walking down the streets. I believe it's maybe a college street or something like that. They met two super nice, super welcoming young lady. They talked for a little bit, and then as in their conversations, they found out that, oh, all of us are Christians. All of us follow the faith. And what ends up happening is the two ladies invited our brothers and sisters to a potluck and to a party, to an event, and then they exchanged contacts. That was fun. That was cool. And then a couple of days later, our two brothers and sisters was invited to a Bible study group. Cool, Bible study group. We want to learn more about the faith. We want to gather with people who are serious and devoted about Christ and about the Word, and we want to go study this. And so they went. And the people were so serious, so devoted. Everybody took notes. Everybody did their homework. Everybody was super focused all the time. And they did that from summer all the way to September. In September, one of these members was in our pastor's group, our pastor's small group. And in one of the prayer times, the pastor, you know, just casually asked him, well, what you've been doing? And then the brother and the sister said, oh, we've been going to this Bible study group. And because it's a pastor, he's like, oh, cool, yeah, that's great. Learn more about faith, learn more about God, that's great. What have you been talking about? Super casually. And the sister said, oh, we are going through the Old Testament prophets and the parables of Jesus and then the Revelation. And the pastor was curious. Well, those are pretty difficult books for a new believer. What have you learned? This member was a little hesitant at first, and then they said, well, one of the parables that we learned was from the Old Testament. In this parable, there was the bowl. There was a bowl which had meat in it. There's fire underneath and firewood fueling the fire. And we're taught that the meat in the bowl, the meat are the believers. The bowl is the church. The fire is Satan. And the firewood is the pastors of the churches. And so at that point, the pastor was concerned. He asked him, hold on a second. What's the point of this parable? What did you learn? The member said, we were taught to be careful of church, be careful of pastors, because they're being used by the devil. The pastor at that time, it'd be like you. It's a little, they're super concerned. You have sweat coming out of your palms. And the pastor knows this. This is an Old Testament passage, Ezekiel 24. It could not have meant what he learned, what she learned. There's no church back in Ezekiel. It cannot have meant what she learned. There's no possibility that's what Ezekiel meant. And so the pastor was concerned. The pastor said, can you, if you don't mind, can you share with me the notes that you took? And then this member was super helpful. And so they typed out all the notes and sent it to our pastor. And our pastor looked at the notes and basically found there's a couple of main points that these Bible study groups are teaching. That first of all, that there are certain people in this world that have exclusive understanding to the Bible. Nobody can understand it other than these chosen people, presumably the teachers in this Bible study group. And if anybody teaches a different teaching than this Bible study group, you have to be careful. And in some extreme cases, if they keep teaching it or if they keep talking to you about it, you have to leave them, block them, you know, isolate yourself from them because they're bad people. To that point, the pastor asked the members, this is super concerning, super concerning. Where have you been going? What do they have a name? There's no name. Is there like a website address? No address. Is there a statement of faith anywhere? Any pamphlet they give? No pamphlet. What are the notes? Do they give you any notes? No notes. You handwrite them. Where do you gather? Oh, it's a little store at Lougheed Mall. It with all their glass windows are blocked. And then one of our other pastors heard of all this, Googled for a long time, stumbled on a Reddit post that matched the description of this so-called Bible study group, found the name of the leaders in this Bible study group, cross-checked with the members, and we were able to find that this is a cult, Korean cult, called SCJ, New Heaven and New Earth Church of Jesus Christ. The so-called pastor of this cult believes himself to be the one to rule with the rod of iron, to be the one that has authority over the nations. That's what he believes. Now, thankfully, we were able to talk to the members and rescue them, get them out of there. But church, the point is the beast is real. Things are not as they seem. The beasts are out there, Lougheed Mall, college campus, some even just down the street. Satan is lurking around looking for people to devour, looking for you to devour. And now if you say, well, these false prophets, you know, I don't even stumble across them. There are tons of false teachings out there. I'll give you an example. Daryl Johnson, retired professor from Regent College, he wrote this book and he explained this really well. He says, the common denominator in all these false teachings and false culture, false religion, false this and that, is they teach a theology of compromise. So even if you cannot false this one teacher, you can still spot this theology of compromise. And how it goes is they teach you that you can follow Christ and follow the world because everybody else is doing it. That's just the way things are. For example, in areas of relationship and sexual intimacy, a lot of Christ followers have compromised because everybody else in the world around them is doing it. And many of them don't even see an issue with it. They believe the sexual teaching of the Bible is outdated, waiting until marriage is old-fashioned, false teaching. And in some more hidden cases, there are hidden false religions, like religion of freedom. If you worship freedom, if you see freedom as the most important trait in your life, most important thing in your life, you have a religion of freedom. If you put yourself as the most important thing, you have a religion of self. And neither of those is what Jesus Christ taught. Theology of compromise. That is one of the main distinguishing factors of these false religions. They say, you don't have to be that serious about your faith. You don't have to do that much for your faith. You can do both and, you know, that's what everybody else is doing it. And so what ends up happening is you will start worshiping an idol without knowing, and you turn away from Christ. And what happens is then you are now a Christian on the outside, but deep inside, you're worshiping the dragon and the beast. Nobody knows. You may not even know this. And now every single day, you're walking to closer and closer to the edge of the cliff, and one day, when the time is up, Satan's going to pull you down. Church, it's time to wake up. This is how the dragon goes at you to make war on the people who follow Christ. I'm not kidding. The accusations and deceptions and the lies are real. You've heard them. It's not just you talking to yourself. the persecutions are real. It's not just peer pressure. And these infiltrations certainly is real. They're out on the streets. It's all over the internet, all over the culture. This is a war that you didn't sign up for. And it's a war you cannot run from. And honestly, this is a war that you cannot win. And more precisely, I mean, this is a war that you cannot win on your own. In order to remain victorious and to conquer, you have to hold on. You have to follow, well, follow the one who conquered. Follow the child. Follow Christ. He has conquered. He's the ultimate conqueror. And I want you to remember this. All this stuff that Satan's doing, it's not a sign of his victory. It's a sign of his defeat. Remember this. All this stuff, all this mess that's going on, all these attacks, is not a sign of his victory. It's a sign of his defeat. Because he has been thrown down, he has already lost. And so he's frustrated, he's angry. And so this is his final struggle before time's up. So hold on to the conqueror. How? We also have three strategies. Three counteroffensive, if you will. The strategy we find is in the middle of chapter 12. When the heavens sing of Christ's victory and the victory of the church, this is what they say in the middle of that song. The brothers and sisters have conquered Satan by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, for they loved not their lives even unto death. Three strategies to conquer. Blood of the Lamb, word of their testimony, and they love not their lives, even unto death. First, we overcome the disinformation, the accusation, and the propaganda leaflets dropped onto your head by the blood of the Lamb. Satan wants you to believe that you're not loved, that you're not chosen, that you're nobody, that you're not wanted. But Jesus' sacrifice, his blood, tells you something else. He showed his love for you even while you're a sinner. He died for you. That's proof. His blood is proof. His blood is proof of his forgiveness. His blood is proof also of the fact that he's chosen you. He died so that you may live for him. You're not without purpose. That blood of Christ nullifies all of this disinformation. So when Satan hurls his lies and deceptions and drop leaflets on your head, you can tell him, the blood of Christ has shown me that I am loved and I am forgiven and I am chosen by God. Satan, you have no place in here. You can tell him that. Second, you conquer by the word of the testimony. Some translations have this, the word of their evidence, as in the truth. What else did you think it was? You overcome infiltration, false religion, false teaching by the truth, the Bible, the Word of God. And unfortunately, throughout the years, so many Christ followers don't take this seriously. We don't learn the truth. We don't bother to learn what's right and what's wrong. It's like you're going to a battle with an empty gun. There's no ammo to this. And it's been so difficult for us to read the Bible. Come on. Pastors and leaders have to beg you to all do devotion, quiet time. It's your war. He's going at you. I can't defend for you. Yes, it's your devotion time. It's your quiet time. Oh, you have to squeeze in 5 minutes, 10 minutes of every day. Come on. They are getting at you. You have to go find yourself some ammo to load your gun. He's right there. Wake up. The word is your weapon. Defend yourself. Third, God's people conquer because they loved not their lives even unto death. The beasts of the sea, the people and the institution, they may encircle Christ believers, Christ followers, and they force us to choose. You choose Christ or you choose life. And Christ followers throughout the century, from, you know, all the way when Jesus went to heavens, they conquered and overcame because they believe. They believe death doesn't have the last word, because Christ died. Yes, he died, but he went and took the keys from death and Hades, and death's keys are lost. Christ has the keys. And I mean, if death cannot hold you, if death cannot harm you, what do you have to be afraid of? What's people going to do to you? What's people laughing at you going to do to you? What's being isolated going to do to you? What's some financial loss going to do to you? What's the worst thing that can happen when death itself cannot kill you? Because your future is in heaven. Your future is in heaven. Through those who conquer, they will reign with Christ forever and ever. What's the worst thing that can happen to you in this life? God's people conquer by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, for they loved not their lives even unto death. Church, open your eyes. Wake up. You're in a war that you didn't sign up for. You cannot escape from. You cannot run away from. You can't just close your eyes, go back to school on Monday, go back to work on Monday, and pretend nothing's happening. You can't. Satan is going to keep coming after you to bring you down to hell with him. He knows his time is short. Wake up. It's a war out there. Stop sleeping. Stop pretending nothing's happening. And I mean, to some of you, stop being lazy about this. Just at the end, I want to tell you this. You know how soldiers get the motivation to fight? You tell them the end. You tell them to look at the end. Look at what you're fighting for. Look at what's on the other side of this battle line. You know what's on the other side? I want to show you. John wants to show you. This is what he saw. After he saw the dragon and the two beasts, all of this war, he saw a vision of the end, of those who conquered, of those who overcame. He saw on Mount Zion, in heaven, this is God's place, stood the Lamb, who's Jesus. And with him, those who had Jesus' name on his Father's name written on their foreheads, those who pledge allegiance to Christ. He saw all of those people, and they are singing a new song, a song of victory and triumph. They celebrate, and they stand with Jesus and with God in the new heaven and new earth. That's what you're fighting for. New heaven and new earth. That's why you're fighting. And God promised you himself. To the one who conquers, will have this inheritance, this heritage of the new heaven and new earth. And I want to tell you, it's a great place there. And I will be his God, and he will be my son. Church, that is the victory you're headed to. Church, so in the meantime, stay alert. Wake up. Wake up. You're in a war, but it's a war that's already been won. So stay in the victorious side. Continue to conquer. Continue to overcome. Hold on to the conqueror. Because you see, church, the battle is not yours to fight. It belongs to him, because the victory belongs to Christ. Church, I'll have you stand. I'm going to bless you that you have strength and you have courage and you have boldness and you have perseverance to fight this war. When people threaten you, when people tempt you, that you're able to stand firm, and conquer and overcome.